Missions.org. Thanks.
Greetings. Welcome to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champain. This is February 27th, 2011, and you just heard before we went on air, public broadcasting is in the crosshairs. Right now, its very survival and future are being debated in the United States Congress. It's going to be the subject today for us for the full hour here on Media Matters. We're going to have Pat Butler joining us from the Association of Public TV Stations, as well as Will's own Jay Pierce live here in the studio with me. So it's going to be a great hour. We'll be taking your calls and talking about the future of nonprofit and non-commercial media in the United States. But first, let's go to Media Minutes.
Any views or opinions expressed by the hosts of Media Minutes are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or licensee.
Welcome to Media Minutes. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
And I'm Megan Tatey. After years of working in the dark, the U.S. government finally has a map that should shed light on the nation's broadband needs. Who has it and who doesn't? Last week, the National Telecommunications and Information Administration released a nationwide map that offers the first comprehensive picture of broadband deployment in America. But the map has several major shortcomings, making the picture a little fuzzy. Rather than forcing internet service providers to give the data about their subscribers, the NTIA gave $300 million in grants to 56 different state-designated private entities to gather the information. The result? 56 different sets of data collected in 56 different ways, as well as data that is simply missing from the map. Derek Turner, Research Director of Free Press.
But the biggest glaring omission from this data set is it has no information on price. The biggest ISPs like AT&T jumped up and down and said that they would throw a wrench in the entire process if the government required them to list how much their services cost. Now we essentially have a somewhat interesting data set that lacks the most important variable when we're doing broadband market analysis, which is price.
Lacking accurate and complete data, Turner says, could make it impossible to connect Americans to broadband.
The government's talking right now about spending billions of dollars trying to get broadband into areas of the country that don't have it. But if the map is incomplete and we don't actually know where those holes are, or we overestimate in other areas, then we're going to continue to waste the subsidy money that could be used to close the digital divide.
Turner says the FCC must stand up to the phone and cable industry and compel ISPs to report basic pricing and availability data on broadband to help fill in the holes.
Canadian internet users sent a strong message to their telecommunications regulator earlier this month. Stop making decisions in favor of the big telecoms and start making policy that helps people. The Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission imposed a new fee structure called usage-based billing on all the independent ISPs in the market. That means once you reach a certain cap on your broadband usage, you have to pay a lot more for going over your limit. Some ISPs have caps as low as 25 gigabytes, which doesn't last long with today's high-bandwidth applications like video.
They're talking about charging upwards of $4 per gigabyte. So some people's bills would double, some quadruple. Like, it would just fundamentally change how the internet works.
Steve Anderson is the national coordinator of openmedia.ca. He and his staff of two started a petition called Stop the Meter. The campaign exploded and became the largest in Canadian history. So far, they've collected more than 440,000 signatures. After both the Liberal and Conservative parties signed on, The government announced that they would require the CRTC to review its decision.
Basically, they said you better come back with a decision that doesn't include usage-based billing.
Canadians have been frustrated with high prices, terrible customer service, and lack of choices for internet and cell phone providers for a long time.
With these new fees being imposed, I think Canadians just sort of drew a line in the sand and said, you know, we're not going to be pushed any further.
Anderson admits it was a big win, but he has no illusions about the ongoing fight for keeping the internet open.
We're expecting that we'll win. You know, we still have to keep the pressure on, but it's certainly come a long way, and so far it's looking like a victory.
Anderson will continue to be vigilant about usage-based billing as the CRTC review moves forward, but he isn't stopping there. He says the issue of metered billing is a symptom of a larger structural problem in telecommunications.
There's a few different things we can do, and one of them is reform our regulator so it has more of a public interest mandate, and the other is take away the kind of market power these companies have, you know, separate their different businesses.
For more information, go to openmedia.ca. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit www.freepress.net.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and the participants.
Okie dokie, welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you this Sunday, February 27th, 2011, here in WILL AM 580, based in beautiful Urbana, Illinois. Today we're going to be talking about this station. We're going to be talking about WILL. We're going to be talking about NPR stations, community radio stations. We're going to be talking about public television stations. All of the funding that supports all of the stations I just named is in jeopardy. It has been eliminated in a vote in the House of Representatives, and it's about to go before the Senate. And the future of public broadcasting and the station you're listening on is very much up in the air. And so we're going to talk about the politics of public broadcasting today with a couple of guests who know a great deal about the subject. And before we go to our guests, I want to let you know that I, Bob McChesney, of course, am on this station. So this I'm full disclosure that I have a stake in the outcome of this, although I received no compensation for my labor doing this program. I have a strong material and spiritual attachment to the station. And also, I'm the co-founder and a board member of a group called Free Press, which is actively organizing support for public broadcasting. So I'm in that capacity, too. This is not an issue in which I can claim neutrality. Our guest today, joining me first right here in the studio, is Jay Pierce, who I think is known to all WILL listeners. If he isn't, he should be. And Jay, I think they gave you some sort of bureaucratic title. What is it exactly?
Director of Created Content.
Yeah, that sounds like some Silicon Valley mumbo-jumbo.
It's the new title for somebody who's in charge of all of the programming and content that we have on air and online.
Okay. Well, you should be like visionary director.
Radio, television.
Isn't that what they do at Google, like visionary director?
That's
or something?
Jack Brighton.
Jack Brighton's your visionary director?
Yes.
Okay. And then joining us on the phone lines, we're honored to have the president and CEO of the Association of Public Television Stations, who's also one of the leading figures organizing the campaign in Washington to protect and defend funding for nonprofit, non-commercial broadcasting in the United States. Pat Butler is joining us. Mr. Butler?
Nice to be with you, Bob.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And let's get right to work, Pat Butler. If you could sort of give us the lay of the land for, and I must say, from my experience, although many of our listeners are avid supporters of NPR, public broadcasting, and appreciate the service and contact their members of Congress whenever their moments like this arise, at the same time, I think there's a general ignorance level of, you know, how much support stations get from the federal government, how this takes place. Could you just give sort of an ABC of the economics of public broadcasting for our listeners?
Oh, sure, Bob. Well, first of all, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is the nonprofit corporation that receives this money from the government every year. And the reason that CPB was set up was to provide kind of a firewall between Congress and the public broadcasting community, so that there was not undue interference or influence from the Congress to the public broadcasting community. So CPB serves as that firewall, and CPB also distributes these funds according to a grant formula to public radio and television stations all over the country, and the percentage of those grants to the total budgets of the local stations can vary from as little as about 10% to as much as 80% in some stations up in Alaska, for example.
And now we're at a situation where the federal budget for public broadcasting, and this also includes community stations too, like WEFT here in Champaign-Urbana, that budget is roughly $420 million currently. Is that correct?
$430 million, right.
$430, okay. And what percentage of the entirety of the spending of these stations would that account for?
Well, the public broadcasting community writ large is about a $2.9 billion business enterprise, and so the math would be that for every dollar that the federal government contributes, the public broadcasting community raises an additional $6 in private funds from foundations and from corporations and from viewers and listeners like yours.
Now, then the argument I guess some might make is, well, since you're doing such a bang-up job, Pat Butler, raising money from all these other non-governmental sources, why do you need to bother the taxpayers?
Well, this is the essential investment in the entire infrastructure of public broadcasting that the federal government provides. It's the money that we use to keep the lights on, to do all the facilities, and to keep the programming coming, and it creates a system which makes all the rest of this economic enterprise possible. Some very large stations in Boston and New York and here in Washington, for example, might be able to do without the at least some of this funding, but then the system would collapse because stations in smaller markets wouldn't be able to pay for the programming that these large stations produce, and so the system would be out of whack, and then the whole community would collapse.
Let's go to one of these smaller markets as we speak. We have right here next to me Jay Pierce from WILL AM 580 and the WILL family of public stations here. Jay, talk about what public broadcasting looks like here and how it would be affected if you lost your federal subsidy.
Well, we look at about $1.3 million coming into WILL stations, Illinois Public Media, each year, roughly that much from our community service grants that we apply for and compete for, as Pat was talking about. And then we turn, that's about a quarter of our operating budget here. And then we turn a good percentage of that over and pay dues to NPR, American Public Media, Public Radio International, and buy programs like Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Car Talk, Prairie Home Companion, and the like. And we get some money from the state of Illinois and some from the university, a lot of in-kind support from the university, but over 40% of the money comes from listeners. But, as Pat was saying, it's a three-legged stool. Mm-hmm. And so could we make up that 25%, that $1.3 million from another source? I don't know. In a community this size, I think the best fundraisers would tell you you'd have a hard time coming up with another. We raise from this community $2.1 million a year already. Could we raise 3.3? I don't know.
Well, I do, and I don't want to. I wouldn't necessarily want to go there because I know that we have all hands on deck raising that $2 million. It's not like we have a lot of people just sort of getting suntans who can come up and start working on going to $3.3 million. I'm Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters and WILL AM 580. We're talking about the future, the present and future of public radio and television and community radio, all forms of nonprofit and non-commercial broadcasting in the United States today on Media Matters. The number here, if you'd like to call in with questions or comments, 217-333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Our guest again, who you were just listening to, Jay Pierce from WILL AM 580. And on the phone, we have the president and CEO of the Association of Public TV Stations from Washington, D.C., Pat Butler. Pat Butler, you worked for 18 years for the Washington Post, so you have a long experience. And I also see that you, your consulting work, I assume some sort of public relations once represented Cary Grant. Is that correct?
I did. I was Cary Grant's speechwriter for several years. He and I met each other in 1976, and we remained friends and colleagues for the rest of his life, and that was one of the great experiences of my life.
Do you think Cary Grant would be supporting public broadcasting?
I'm absolutely sure he would.
Yeah, I thought so, too. He struck me as that kind of guy. Well, let's see. Let's go to the phone lines right now. We have a caller who's already been waiting patiently since we began the show, since the bell first rang. Let's now go to Muhammad, line one. You're on the air. Yes, Muhammad.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm thrilled to hear you talking about this, and I have been having ideas that I haven't heard reflected, and I wondered what people thought about this. I heard somewhere when this whole funding thing started that the opinion that to the victor go the spoils, and the fact that the Republicans won the House lets them beat on one of our flagship things, and I think it's more than that. So what I've always thought that I've wondered if it's sort of opiate for the liberals, so that when we're home puttering around our house on the weekend, we hear, oh yeah, people think like us, that makes me feel better. Or does it make us more informed and therefore more powerful and likely to act and all that? So that's a question. Does it do anything for us adults, or does it just make us feel better? But lately I have decided that maybe it's the kids that they really want. They really do want Big Bird off the air, because the kid programming makes all kids more informed, and it teaches them things, and even the best parents cannot spend as much time as they, you know, would maybe like to, and the kids learn from television. But that helps the lower-income kids, too, and maybe they really don't want to help the lower- and middle-income kids. They want, you know, with the economic disparity, they want the poor poorer and the rich richer, and why should they spend public money to educate those kids?
All right. Well, thank you very much, Muhammad, for those questions, comments, and let's go to our guest and see get their response. Let me start with you, Pat Butler. Any comments on those?
Well, sure. It's a very interesting set of questions there that Muhammad has raised. Let me take them in reverse order, if I can. Even our staunchest opponents in Congress are stipulating that Sesame Street and some of the other programs that we have for children on public television are really quite good. Their own children have taken advantage of them over the years, and there's no dispute that Sesame Street and the other programming has had quite a good effect on children of all socioeconomic backgrounds. They stipulate that. Their problem with public broadcasting today, they say, is that we're facing a $1.5 trillion federal budget deficit, and they have to look for everything they can find that they can find to cut. And unfortunately, one of the things that they have looked for is public broadcasting, which is about 1/1,000 of the one ten thousandth of the total federal budget, and if they could cut us over and over again, and it wouldn't have any material effect on the federal budget deficit.
Yeah, Pat Butler, can I stop you on that point? Because
sure.
It's such an important point you're making right there. The amount of money being spent on public broadcasting is $430 million.
That's right.
We're talking $1.5
trillion. That's right. And this is out of a $3.7 trillion federal budget for 1 year.
It's not literally, but it's figuratively a drop in the bucket. And what's striking to me, I do research on the public broadcasting, and I was just checking on this before the show. And the sort of mainstream surveys of American taxpayers of what programs they consider the most valuable their tax dollars support, invariably public broadcasting ranks in the top two or three, year after year, whoever the source of the survey is. So it seems like if you're going to go down the things to cut, why is that on the list?
Well, there has been, as Mohammed was alluding to, there has been some ideological opposition to public broadcasting from the beginning. I think you overlay that now with a very serious and real federal budget crisis, and the two of those conjoined have created the threat that we're facing today. But I also would say that you're exactly right. This research, which goes back many years, suggests that we are routinely considered one of the best investments that the federal government makes, and this judgment is made by people all the way across the political spectrum. And I think at the end of the day, we're going to have a better result because those same people are taking the initiative to call their congressmen and call their senators and let them know how important public broadcasting is, and that's having a real effect.
Jay Pierce, let's go to you on that very point. Members of Congress, here locally, we're represented by Tim Johnson. What's his position been on this issue?
Well, Tim was on the Public Broadcasting Caucus for a long time, but before the vote came up, when we talked with him, his office, he had said that he was going to have to vote for the cuts because it was part of the deficit reduction and we had the cuts somewhere. And then, of course, the whole vote went down. I mean, it wasn't an option to not vote for cutting public
broadcasting.
You couldn't
do a line item vote.
If you were going to continue the budget. Yeah. And so a lot of Congress people have told us now that, well, we had to vote to continue, you know, the continuing resolution. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a budget and government shuts down. And so since then, we have been in contact with Congressman Johnson's office, and he has said that he has indicated that he'd be more supportive now. He has heard from a lot of constituents, but, you know, not knowing exactly what is going to be in front of him.
Now, historically, he has been supportive of
historically,
public
broadcasting. Yeah, very supportive, yeah.
Bob, if I may say so.
Yeah, please do, Pat.
Pardon me for interrupting, sure. But the House of Representatives, the House Appropriations Committee, just on this past Friday, has come out with a new version of its continuing resolution to keep the government going past March the 4th, and that new resolution does not include a cut for public broadcasting. So these calls and contacts that Jay is talking about have already had a very substantial effect on the thinking of the House. Yeah. I mean, we've got a long way to go, and the Senate hasn't taken this up yet, but we are on the right track.
Wow, that's good information. And the
what
Senate,
about the senators? Yeah, we've
senators
got...
have well, Dick Durbin has been a supporter. Mm-hmm. He said there might be a cut, but he can't believe that there wouldn't be some restoration, and he would be in favor of it. Mark Kirk said over the weekend in Macomb to a manager of a station over there at Western Illinois University, Dori Valillo, and she reported out to us today that Mark Kirk said that he would not vote to cut funding for public broadcasting. And then Bob Schilling, who is the congressperson from over there, when asked what he intended to do, I can't remember the exact quote. I can look it up.
Don't make it up.
But he said, in essence, that he would be following what Kirk did, what Kirk was going to do. So in essence, I guess he is saying, and he's probably heard from a lot of constituents too. He said that I agree with Senator Kirk. So there you go. So it's a big difference today than it was when we were facing that. And I think Pat, you might agree, when we were facing that. You either vote for the whole package in the right. continuing resolution, which yeah. included the cut. Right. Now, there was an amendment that had been offered that wasn't even voted on
right.
because of a technicality.
Well,
it would have restored some of the funding. So it did become this all-or-nothing thing.
Pat? Right. Not to get too complex about it, Bob, but Congressman Earl Blumenauer of Oregon, who is the chairman of the Public Broadcasting Caucus in Congress, offered an amendment that would have restored the funding for public broadcasting and created an offset, which is take the revenues from someplace else, and the someplace else in his construction was an oil company subsidy, and that was ruled out of order, and so they couldn't come up with an up or down vote on public broadcasting for that reason.
Because they said that the money, if you're going to restore money, it had to come from the same basic pool.
That's right.
Right. And exactly the oil company subsidy wasn't.
Right.
I'm Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters. You've just been listening to the voice of Jay Pierce from WILLAM 580 and also Pat Butler, who's on the phone lines with us from Washington, where he's the president and CEO of the Association of Public TV Stations. And he's also the head of the Public Media Association, which represents both public TV and radio on Capitol Hill in its negotiations and lobbying efforts to save and preserve and ideally expand public broadcasting in the United States. And I want to go back to the phone lines in a second, but before I do, Pat Butler, one of the things that I have conversations oftentimes with people from Europe and Asia, and I think most Americans are not aware of the fact that virtually every major democracy in the world has public broadcasting like the United States, but it has it supported by the government, the national government, on a per capita basis, anywhere from 20 to 120 times greater. I mean, we're by far the laggard in the entire world of democratic nations in terms of federal or national government support of public broadcasting.
Well, it's true, Bob. I will say that public broadcasting came relatively late to the United States. The Public Broadcasting Act was passed in 1967, and by then there had been commercial broadcasters on radio and then on television on the air for upwards of 45 years or more. And so it was a bit different evolution for public broadcasting in the United States than it was in these other countries, where they started with that and then branched out into more commercial enterprises. But you're right. I mean, the math is stunning when you consider that in the United States, all of public broadcasting cost $1.35 per citizen, as compared with the BBC, for example, where it's many times that, as you were saying. We appreciate the fact that the Congress is willing to do what it has been willing to do for us for the past 40 years, but compared with the other democracies that we regularly compare ourselves with, this is a pittance.
I mean, Jay Pierce, couldn't you turn it around the other direction and say, given the sharp decline in the amount of resources that commercial radio and television broadcasters have devoted to news coverage, especially local news coverage, which you know well, over the last 10 or 20 years, that this is precisely the moment the funding should be going up, especially to these local stations that are actually trying to cover their communities that aren't owned by some chain out of Texas?
Well, you know, I obviously would agree with that, being the person who's responsible for our news department, and we have four full-time people working in our news department, and we've expanded greatly our online capacity. We're doing a lot of engagement in the communities, community conversations to find out what the important issues are. You know, we've moved the CU Citizen Access Group from the College of Media into our newsroom to start working with them on different issues. And more of the investigative journalism curriculum.
Let me ask you one quick question.
Are going to be moving here too. But Bob, I guess to get back to it, yeah, I think, you know, our news may not be as exciting. We don't have big news sounders. We don't titillate you with teaser headlines and have sweeping graphics going around on things and sounders and all of that. But we do have solid journalism happening here between the professional staff members, some of the faculty members working with us on different angles and students. And I think this is replicated at public radio station after public radio station around the country. I don't know the number of full-time news reporters in radio. I don't know that it exceeds two or three
in the
among all
today.
Of the rest of the 20 stations in our community.
And what was it when you first came to Champaign-Urbana? How many radio journalists were there in the commercial sector, roughly, ballpark? And that's going back, what, two decades?
Yeah, 1995 is when I came here.
Oh, that's recent even.
I think there were probably 12 or more, 12 or 15
Now we're down to two or three.
And now we're down to probably two or three full-time.
So Will is 60% of the local radio journalism in this community is coming out of WILL.
Oh, like that. Yeah,
and it used to be probably like 3 or 5%. 15 years ago, 20 years ago.
I don't know. We had about 7 or 8 news people.
Okay, 12%.
So, 15, yeah,
20.
Yes,
but the point simply is it's playing a much larger role in the picture.
Right, right. And I think that, you know, what we're doing, too, is a little bit different kind of news. We're not doing the headline-type event coverage of this is what happened and here's who was involved. And we really are trying to get more into the analysis and the context of news as opposed to here's what somebody said and somebody else said, no, that's not right. Here's what I say. And so when you listen to our news, you listen to the stories, you listen to the five-minute pieces, listen online, and you can see online. We're doing a lot more video. And then you listen to our talk show, Focus, 2 hours a day,
mm-hmm.
10 different topics a week, many of them to do with current issues in the news. It allows you to get in the conversation and ask some of the questions that reporters aren't asking. You get to do that firsthand. And this is what we're putting together. And then we're out in communities.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it was 10 years ago that we did a number of features, and we partnered with the Herald and Review in Decatur on the dropout issue there, which has still been a serious problem. And recently, the Decatur Herald and Review, a couple of years ago, ran an editorial that basically said, now work is being done, the conversation continues, but it wasn't even being talked about until WILL came over and partnered with us, and we talked about it 10 years ago. We're applying for a CPB grant now. Hopefully we'll be able to partner again with the Herald and Review and others and go back and see what's working and what's not working in the Decatur high schools, and why they are on the critical list.
Yeah.
Who
and
else?
Clearly, commercial radio isn't doing that anymore, if they ever were. That's not on their mission list any longer.
I will say that WAND-TV over there is doing a series on this. We're going to spend 2 years doing it, though.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to stay with it for 2 years or more doing that story and partnering with people in the community and groups who, this is the difference between what the federal funding and what the other support, the subsidies allow us to do. It may not be as exciting and titillating, but there's substance behind it, and that takes support.
Jay Pierce, I'm going to have to use you during pledge drives. The phone lines filled up as soon as your sultry voice came on the air. So let's go to our phone lines now. Let's start with, what do we have next up here? I think it is line four. Line four, Spring Bay, you're on the air with Pat Butler and Jay Pierce.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Good afternoon. There have been ideologues who have been against public broadcasting, which predates our current economic problems, and perhaps this is also giving them some cover. But my observation is that it seems there's been an attack in this country for the past several years on any institution that has the name public in it. Education, broadcasting, workers, the national parks are underfunded. And so I got to thinking, well, maybe we should change the name to Yellowstone Free Market Park, National Free Market Broadcasting. And then we could also change we could have a National Public Navy. Anyway, I'll get off and let you guys keep talking. Thanks. Bye.
Well, thank you very much. And Pat Butler, I know you wrestle with, actually he was being somewhat facetious, but this is a serious issue, isn't it?
Well, it is a serious issue, and I don't want to disparage anybody for having a point of view on this. Even our opponents here, and the whole point of public broadcasting, as Jay was just saying, is to ventilate all of these points of view across the ideological and political spectrums, and let people have their say, and let what we do reflect the great public in the United States. But I will say that what we do in public broadcasting does have a material and measurable effect on the body politic itself. Everything from improving the test scores that of our students in school systems around the country, to an increase of 10 million visitors in the national parks
immediately after Ken Burns's series was on public television a year or so ago. And so it is an ecosystem that works extremely well and for very little money.
Jay? Bob, I want to follow up because you were talking about, and the caller talked about the ideologue. This isn't an argument about who's right or wrong or whose opinion is right or whose opinion is wrong. What I always ask is the people base opinion on fact. But having said that, you know, you're entitled to your opinion. If you don't like the fact that your money's going to public broadcasting, fine. You're entitled to have that opinion. I just want to be heard with what I believe are the facts of the matter in the argument. And Pat just gave some facts there that are very important. And so some people won't be swayed by those. That's fine. I'm not going to say anybody's right or anybody's wrong. You're entitled to your opinion. What we're asking is listen to the facts. The Roper poll that says PBS is the most trusted media in America. You cited the surveys that have said repeatedly that taxpayers believe that public broadcasting is one of the best investments of their tax dollars. It comes in second to the military or tied with it in at least 1 year recently. More than half of the United States citizens use public broadcasting in the course of a week. In the state of Illinois alone, 7.1 million people in Illinois use public media in the course of a week. And when you think about that, you know, that's over half the population.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. And it touches a lot of people's lives. I just ask that, you know, they get a fair shake at being heard. And I'm not asking I'm not telling anybody what to think. When you call your congressperson or your senator, I'm not telling you what to think. That's not what we're here to do. We're here to say you express what you think.
Yeah, let me ask you, Pat Butler, because you're on the front lines there in Washington. I have not detected, and I follow politics pretty closely, any huge groundswell of grassroots momentum to get rid of public broadcasting. Now, it might be out there, but I sensed more of it 20 years ago, frankly, or in the early 90s in the Gingrich years than I do now. But it seems to be coming on fast and furious.
Well, the groundswell is all on the other side right now, Bob. I mean, the people are coming out in the hundreds of thousands, literally speaking, the hundreds of thousands to express support for public broadcasting. We've had senators and congressmen's offices calling us in the last week or so, asking us to call off our dogs, which we're not quite ready to
absolutely
do
not.
Yet.
That's music to your ears, I bet.
Well, exactly right, and I think once people understand that this is not really a groundswell from back home, they are likely to reconsider their opinions as they are already beginning to do. I mean, this new draft of the continuing resolution that I was talking about a few minutes ago would only go through March the 18th, so we're not out of the woods yet by any means. But it does suggest that, that people's opinions matter to their elected representatives, and we're getting an overwhelmingly positive response to this appeal to support public broadcasting.
Pat Butler, our guest today. You just listened to him. He's the president and CEO of the Association of Public Television Stations. Also here in the studio at WILL with me is WILL's own Jay Pierce, who you're all familiar with if you've been listening to the station at all for the last 15 years. We've got two callers who have been waiting very patiently to go on the air, and I'm going to go to them right now. Let's start with line one. Peoria, you're on the air with Pierce and Butler.
Hello. I appreciate WILL, and I appreciate your reasoned approach to this. I'm a member, and I love it, and I listen to this program every week if I can, and I appreciate your reasoned approach to this. I was in the Peace Corps 40 years ago, and I attended in Peoria a panel meeting with the director of the Peace Corps and our congressman and a Caterpillar executive, and what's coming, what it looks like is we've got a Stockholm syndrome with the Republicans. They're saying, well, we won't kill you, so I'm your friend. And I was distressed in this meeting, because that was kind of the portrayal that our congressman gave. You know, I'm not going to vote to totally defund the Peace Corps, so you need to see me as your friend. I wonder what would happen, and I know this is unreasonable and unrealistic, but, you know, what if we just said, go ahead, do what you want to do, and see what happens in the country. See what, you know, defund EPA, defund Planned Parenthood, Public Broadcasting, Peace Corps, and then the same in the newspaper the next day, there was a $35 billion contract given to Boeing for military aircraft. So I will let you talk. Bye.
Well, thank you very much, caller. And, you know, Pat Butler, let me, in the process you're responding to that, let me sort of add on to that a little bit. You know, as I study this issue of public broadcasting funding in Congress, you know, in a lot of the big funding debates in Congress, when you see like $35 billion here, $40 billion there, invariably there's an enormous lobby behind it that benefits by that expenditure that has a commercial advantage. I don't see any large commercial lobby that has a big stake in seeing public broadcasting be defunded. I don't see an industry that will be gleeful. Even the commercial media, really, I don't think public broadcasting is a threat to commercial media at all in this country.
Well, if I may, I just had lunch a week or so ago with Gordon Smith, who is the head of the National Association of Broadcasters, which is the commercial broadcasting community, and he told me exactly that this is certainly not a not a fight that the commercial broadcasters want Congress to win, and to the contrary, they appreciate what we do, and as Jay was describing a few minutes ago, we do different things than what they do. Not to say one is better or worse than the other, but they are just different. We have different missions, and we both perform what we do quite well. The commercial broadcasting is one of the most successful industries in America, but I think, as far as I can see, Bob, the only organized opposition to us in Congress is some of these ideological think tanks, which just think that the government has no business in broadcasting, and that this is a moment when we've got a budget crisis, when we should do what they've been trying to get us to do for 40 years.
Well, it strikes me, if that's the only opposition you guys have, this should be like, you know, Illinois playing a middle school team in basketball. This should be a no-low contendere, no contest.
Well, the problem is, of course, is that we do have this budget crisis, and people are looking for anything that they can find to cut out, and we're going to be having some very painful cuts. Even the president has been proposing to reduce funding for low-income heating assistance and that sort of thing. This is the atmosphere in which we're operating here in Washington, and it's a very difficult proposition. There is not an organized lobby, as I say, to get us out of business, but a lot of these members of Congress, particularly the new ones, and there are 120 new ones, have been elected to Congress on a promise of trying to eliminate at least $100 billion from the federal budget deficit, and that's a hard thing to do once they get down to actually making these decisions, and it is proving a very unpopular thing to do the way that some of these decisions have been made.
Jay Pierce, I think John Maynard Keynes, were he alive today, would be throwing up, and he's probably currently rolling over in his grave. I mean, we cut back constantly, and everyone agrees the terms of the political debate are we have to cut. You know, they tried that in the 1930s, and it returned the Depression to Depression levels in the late 30s. And they realized, you know what, we've got to spend. Because if people don't have incomes, they can't buy stuff, no one will invest. Businesses aren't going to invest if someone's buying their product. And I just wonder, I mean, if we just cut things like public broadcasting, and that's jobs that are leaving too. That's spending in our community that's not going to be replaced anywhere.
In Illinois, 676 people work in public media. That's a payroll of $36 million.
And that's 21,000 around the country.
Around the country, 21,000 people. You know, right here, well, we have 50 or 60 people working at WILO between the radio and television stations and the online service. And support staff, it is significant, you know.
I thought the idea of a recession is to create jobs, not to get rid of them.
You know, I mean, this has come along before, and I don't think we can point out enough, Bob, that, you know, this came along under Nixon, Reagan, Bush.
Yeah.
But this is different. Pat is pointing out why. It's because now you know, there is the urgency to you know, reduce the deficit. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. I would, you know, point out offhand that Rick Steves wrote a column where he mentioned that safe in the budget is $500 million. That's more than the public broadcasting allocation. $500 million for marching bands, military marching bands. That's safe. That's not even under question. And that's more than the budget, you know, would spend on the entire subsidy for public broadcasting. But here's what happens at the organic level. Here's why the whole system falls apart. And I've explained this to a lot of people individually who still can't get over the, it's only 10%, it's only 20% of your budget. Surely you can make that up, or you can cut. Yeah, we've cut 10% of our budget before. We just went through cuts last year. We just laid off 9 people last year. We know how to suck it up here, but here's what happens when you do this to the whole industry. There are some stations for whom it's not just 20% or 25% of their budget. It's 50, 60, 70% of
the budget.
Especially
the smaller stations.
So those stations in largely in rural areas, yeah, not served by anybody else. We have 22 radio stations in our market. Mm-hmm. Some, the public broadcasting stations, the only coverage. So anyway, those stations have to go off the air.
Yeah,
because they just don't have the money to operate.
So rural America, which is already in sort of an economic depression, will just then be in a cultural
service
media depression as well.
Okay, so they go off the air. So those stations aren't paying dues to PBS and NPR anymore and buying the program. So the cost goes up to us, to the rest of us who are here. Well, the cost goes up. WILL can't afford it. Yeah. So we have to stop paying it. And then NPR can't exist because it's not getting the dues, it's not getting the programs purchased. PBS, the same thing. So PBS and NPR collapse, they go away. You're never going to rebuild this. And then we don't have Morning Edition and All Things Considered. We don't have NewsHour. We don't have any of the programs that you listen to us or watch us for. So how's the university going to continue to run the station? Because people contribute to those shows. So our local contributions fall off, even if we had some programming that we could put on. And then the university sitting here, the state still owes it $500 million from this, the last year. And the state of Illinois is not in great shape. So how's it going to subsidize a broadcasting operation? So what? I don't even know. Do we go away? Do we exist in some form? I'm not going to predict. But you see, the point of it is then universities and community licensees have to sell the stations. It would be impossible to afford to rebuild the system. That is my fear.
Yeah, and
you couldn't buy the stations and the frequencies back, even if you could get them. You couldn't rebuild NPR's worldwide news department. You couldn't rebuild NewsHour. You couldn't rebuild Nova.
The whole thing it won't work.
It's just not going to happen.
Bob, you should have my job. That was as good a case as anyone has made in 30 seconds.
Well, I'm sitting here working. You know, Pat, I know. I'm sitting here working in the middle of it, and I guess I'm a little passionate because this is the industry that I love and I work in. Could I find another job? Yeah, I can go make motorcycle helmets in Rantoul and be happy. I can be happy doing a lot of things. But I can't be as happy as when I'm working here, when I come in here, because this is what we do.
Well, also, I mean,
This
station serves the community, and it's successful in the community. I mean, it has a large listenership, a devoted listenership, as do many NPR affiliates around the country, especially at the local level, where these stations oftentimes have come to play a central role because there isn't much else doing covering the community on the radio dial. This is where you have to go.
And you know, we trade salaries and benefits. We don't make as much. I don't think anybody here makes as much as they could make in the private sector. It's a trade-off. You do this because this is it's public service broadcasting. We're in it for public service. We're not in it to get rich and put a Lexus in our garage. Far from it. You know, I'm driving a 1996 Honda Accord now. But that's what we do. We make this commitment. And so that's why we get passionate about it. And And I just, you know, again, well, we should go to the phone calls, but,
yeah,
but
that's
that's the point. Don't forget that it's not just that 20 or 25% or whatever it is.
If you lose that money, you lose – the whole system crumbles down.
And
it's
I really
a fragile
don't,
system.
I have been in broadcasting 35 years, Bob. I've seen public broadcasting being built. I just don't think you could rebuild it.
Our guest today, you just been listening to, is Jay Pierce from WILL AM 580 and the whole WILL family of public stations, I guess we should say, as well as from Washington, Pat Butler, the president and CEO of the Association of Public TV Stations, as well as the head of the Public Media Association, which is working in Washington to protect, preserve, and ideally expand support for public broadcasting in the United States. We have two callers who have been waiting extremely patiently. Let's now go to line – oh, who's our first call here? I think we go to line one. Line one, you're on the air with Butler and Pierce.
Good afternoon. First of all, I think somebody in Washington is following Rahm Emanuel's advice of never let a good crisis go to waste and using that as the bludgeon for getting rid of public radio funding. But I'm wondering where these deficit hawks were when they were handing out $5 trillion to the richest 1% of the country. Where was their deficit hawkishness then? Where was their passion for reducing the deficit? And until public, I mean, and no media is talking about it. They aren't saying, well, isn't this a little bit hypocritical of you to cut, you know, 28 cents from the budget when you gave away $400 trillion?
Pat Butler, is this one of the points in your arsenal when you talk to members of Congress?
No, I'm not going to argue about what government economic policies in the past have wrought. I mean, I think the facts speak for themselves here, as the caller was suggesting here. We've got a $1.5 trillion federal budget deficit, and that has really nothing to do, of course, with what we spend on public broadcasting. But my job is to make sure that Congress understands the value of what we do at a remarkably low cost and with the great support that we create with the American people, both in terms of the advocacy that they are generously providing right now, but more to the point, as Jay was saying, 170 million people consume our news, our culture, our educational programming, and so forth every week, and that is a constituency that is large, that is important, and this is a system that serves those people extremely well and very efficiently.
You know, Pat Butler, you worked with Cary Grant. We talked about it earlier. One of the things, I watch public TV quite a bit with my wife, and you can't help but notice on things like programs like Masterpiece Classic that prominent Hollywood actors and actresses appear in these shows, and I assume they're getting paid a lot less than the scale they get.
Yes, they are.
For a Hollywood film. And I know there's a great deal of support in the arts community among actors, actresses, directors, producers, even people who don't necessarily work for public broadcasting, but for the principle of public broadcasting. Have you been able to draw some of that community into this fight?
Yes. Yeah, so I'll give you one example, and it's been multiplied now by hundreds over the last few weeks. Itzhak Perlman, the great violinist, has 46,000 friends on Facebook, and he went on Facebook when he heard about this crisis and urged all of his Facebook friends to call and write their congressmen and let them know that they support public broadcasting, because it is the only place on both television and radio where classical music and other cultural treasures are still to be found in our country. And those 46,000 people enlisted, and we've gotten entertainers and cultural leaders and so forth all over the country now doing exactly the same thing with their followers and fans, and I think this is having a very significant impact.
You sound very optimistic on one hand, but you don't want us to leave this show today feeling very too optimistic, do
well,
you?
Well, we just can't afford to, Bob. As I say, we've got a temporary reprieve here. The House is going to apparently give us 2 weeks grace here beyond March the 4th. But as all of your callers have understood very well. This is a much bigger fight than a 2-week battle here. There are forces arrayed against us
who have been trying to get public broadcasting out of business for a very long time, and our real salvation here is going to be hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of public television and radio admirers and followers calling their congressmen and letting them know how important this is to them, to their children, to their communities. And I think if we have enough people making enough noise, that ultimately we do win this battle.
Let's go back to our phone lines right now for a final caller, someone who's been waiting extremely patiently for too long. Line 3, Champaign, you're on the air with Butler and Pierce.
Well, I've suffered through your self-congratulatory monologues, which have been highly repetitive. Let me begin by saying that our family has supported WILL since 1974, and not at a minimum level. I have two comments that have really not been considered by all of you gentlemen. One is, in this situation, the pain will have to be shared, and just about every agency that will be cut could put on a monologue such as you have done to indicate how valuable you are. The second is that in the fundraising campaigns that WILL has offered, there has been a consistent statement that only a relatively small percentage of the people within the service area of WILL contributes to its support, which means that a lot of individuals are taking advantage of a service but probably would not be willing to put money forth to continue it, which could raise the question in the minds of legislators, why should we support something for which only a minority of individuals are willing to put money rather than letters in support of its continuance?
Well, thank you very much. Those are excellent questions. Mm-hmm. And let me turn them over to Pat Butler, because I suspect he's dealt with these. Pat?
Well, I will answer the first one, and Jay may want to weigh in on the second. But okay. As to the first, we are making it quite clear to all of the members of Congress that we understand the nature of this budget crisis that we're facing, and that we are prepared, if necessary, to accept the kind of budget trimming that they're talking about for a variety of government sponsored programs, as long as it's proportionate. We are not saying that we should be exempt from all of this. We're saying that this budget crisis is no reason to just zero out public broadcasting. I think at the end of the day, we're likely to take a pretty significant cut, even if we're successful here. But the notion that this ought to be an opportunity just to eliminate all funding for public broadcasting just seems a bit of an extreme response to us.
Jay? Yeah, and I'd repeat that, you know, in our area, we raised $2.1 million, and there is a capacity to give that a community has. And we are at the top of the fundraising metrics in the country. In fact, we won the award last year in the country for our fundraising.
Can I ask you one question? We don't have a lot of time, Jay, on that very point. I mean, one thing, public broadcasting is one of the few public institutions that relies on direct user support. So it's hard to compare it to sort of like, if let's kick donations to pay the salaries of the governor, how many people are going to call and make those donations?
Right. And not everybody can. Not everybody can give. Yeah. But and it's also, it's like, you know, think of it like this. There is the United Way that helps to subsidize some of the social service agencies that are in the community that also get government money. So, you know, could we raise the rest of the money from the community? Should everybody who listens to WILL or watches WILL give us money? I wish they would. That'd be great. But the fact of the matter is, no institution gets 100% fulfillment from its patronage. So we're very high on the metrics. So I stand behind what we're doing. Some people, and in answer to the question number one, some people just don't get the message or don't believe the message, which is why we're being so repetitive right now, trying to explain the reality of the situation.
Pat Butler, we've only got about 20 seconds left. Any closing words?
Well, Ken Burns just had a piece in the Washington Post this morning where he's talking about the value of public broadcasting as a cultural, educational, and informational influence that helps equip us for enlightened citizenship. And I think that is entirely the point. I think that's the glory of public broadcasting in this country, and that's what we're trying to see preserved.
Well, Pat Butler, thank you so much for taking time out of your Sunday to join us here at WILL.
Thank you.
And Jay Pierce, as always, thank you for you get no vacation. You get no days off. So I can't thank you for taking time from your day off because you're working 24/7 here at WILL.
Not quite.
Well, for which we're all eternally grateful. And I want to thank Kyle Kroha for working the board today. I want to thank Melissa Trentz, my producer, for all her great work. I'm Bob McChesney. I'll be back with you in 167 hours with Malkia Cyril talking about media reform. Until then, everyone, have a great week.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Mike Weaver Ballroom Dance. Private instruction for social or competitive dancing, weddings, or other special events. Lessons for singles or couples, beginners, or advanced of all ages. Information at 370-